Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. As acceptance and tolerance slowly grows for same-sex relationships here in America and the West, attention is turning to other cultures with far less tolerance. For example, Russian officials worry about possible demonstrations and boycotts against their recently enacted anti-gay laws for the upcoming Winter Olympics in Sochi. And certainly the list of governments with repressive anti-gay laws is long in the world. My guest today has written a powerful novel about a hidden culture within a culture that most Americans don't understand at all. Iranian-American Sarah Farazan's first novel, If You Could Be Mine, sheds light on the realities and repressions of being gay in one of those cultures, in this case, contemporary Iran. In the book, 17-year-old Sahar has been in love with her best friend Nazreen since they were six. But of course, being gay is a crime punishable by death in Iran, so they carry on in secrecy and with whispered promises until Nazreen's parents announce they've arranged for her marriage. Sahar loses hope for a future with Nazreen until she finds a different solution. In Iran, homosexuality may be illegal, but to be a man trapped in a woman's body is seen in that culture as nature's mistake, and sex reassignment is legal, accessible, and actually encouraged. But does Sahar love Nazreen as a man or as a woman? The book is getting tremendous critical response. It's titled If You Could Be Mine. It's published by Algonquin Books. And Sarah Farazan joins us today on Studio Tulsa. Sarah Farazan, welcome to Studio Tulsa. Thanks very much for joining us.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.
Give us a sense. What was the inspiration for If You Could Be Mine?
Of course. Well, I grew up in Massachusetts. I'm born and raised to two wonderful parents who happen to be from a country called Iran, or Iran, as we're used to in the news. And they taught me to be very proud of that heritage, even when it wasn't terribly popular. The problem being was, as I was growing up, I realized that I had same-sex attractions that weren't going away, and I was very closeted and didn't act on any of those feelings for most of my high school life. So as an adult, I've really written a lot about those themes and kind of the struggle between those two identities. And in graduate school, I thought of the idea about what it would be like, let's say, someone like me growing up in the country my parents are from, who are like me, who are dealing with these two conflicting identities of being gay and then being very proud of their Iranian heritage. And how do you exist in a place that, you know, you're not allowed to be yourself? So that's really where the idea came from in graduate school.
And of course, in Iran, I don't know what the average family, the cultural norm is, but the governmental norm is that homosexuality is punishable by death, and that does occur.
In some instances, I think a lot of the time they don't use capital punishment, but that's like the highest offense you can have. So sometimes it can be imprisonment, sometimes it can be lashings. It depends on, you know, how you're kind of found out, I guess. Mm-hmm. So it's this very strange thing where, like, people kind of know who is and who isn't, but you can't be public with your affection or really, you know, have as very long-term a relationship as you would like, depending on who your neighbors are, because you're always worried about who's going to kind of blow up your spot in a way, you know. So it's a very kind of hush-hush taboo subject, which is kind of sad because I feel like everyone kind of deserves a full, happy life. So I don't know what the solution is. But the rules there are really against, you know, any kind of
same-sex relationship.
Yes, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And culturally, is it just as conservative as the governmental stance?
Yeah, I think so. I think sexuality in general is really not a talked-about topic anyway, even though obviously people, you know, as human beings, that's just a natural thing. But I think, you know, the culture is so much focused on family and, you know, children and weddings are a big deal in Persian culture. So I think there's just this set idea of, oh, we want our children to have, you know, the traditional kind of family too. So I think it's more that than it is, you know, the idea of the big wedding and the husband and wife and that kind of thing is very important.
The reason I ask is because prior to the revolution, mm-hmm. Iran was westernizing. In fact, in many ways, the revolution was a backlash against mm-hmm. that westernization. So I'm wondering if people's attitudes are somewhat conflicted because, you know, anybody who spends time in Iran will always report, you know, there's this big disconnect between how the people of Iran relate to anything and how the government portrays that.
Yeah, I think that's a huge difference, too, especially between, like, the government of the states and the government there. I think the problem is between the two governments and not with the people within those two countries. Like, you know, Iranians that I met have no ill will towards the West or Americans. It's just their government tells them to. So it's a very strange, there's so many paradoxes.
And they're also very open to Western ideas. But
yeah,
it's like a female fashion. It's covered by the heavy chador.
Well, it's not as heavy, actually. You know, if you took look at pictures of kind of contemporary women now, like young people especially, and majority of the country is like under 35 years old. Mm-hmm. I think about like one third of the country, if I'm not mistaken. So it's a really post-revolution, huge young population, and I think they are really politically active, and I think they try and push the limits as much as they can while maintaining, you know, kind of a safety, and sometimes not. And it's not just for issues like homosexuality. It's fashion. It's music. So there's a lot of young people really interested in kind of, you know, their passions, their interests. And I think when you have any kind of government that subdues that, I don't know how long you can maintain that, you know.
Yeah.
So it's, I don't know when there's a change or if there's a change, and it's not up to me to impose my beliefs because I'm, you know, an American and I live here. But at the same time, I think hopefully there can be some understanding among people and there can be more progress on social issues.
Well, your story, If You Could Be Mine, tells the story of Sahar, who has been in love with her best friend Nazreen since they were both six. And Sahar was a person who knew that she was attracted to her same sex at a pretty young age.
Yeah, but it's very chaste. It's not like a, like, oh my God, I can't wait to, you know, get in bed with her kind of puberty
hormonal thing.
It's a very chaste kind of innocent, you know, in the way where you're like, I'm going to marry my best friend Bobby, you know. So it's, for me, the book is more about the romance between the two than it is about, even though it's a book so much about sexual orientation, it's really just about the love between these two people rather than having any kind of salacious scene that might, you know, shy people away from the issue at hand. So there's no sex scene. There's no kind of, you know, as she gets older and realizes these attractions are not going away and she becomes of, you know, teenage age, then I think that becomes more clear. But when they are so young, I think it's more a connection between these two people.
Kindred spirits and a sense of intimacy.
And they just know each other so well. And Nazreen has kind of become Sahar's whole world because Sahar's mom passes away when she's 12 and she's left to take care of her, you know, depressed dad. So she really doesn't have anyone to talk to. And Nazreen really fills that void for so many different kind of emotional relationships.
But things change when, I guess they're about to turn 18, and Nazreen's parents have a party, and they announce that Nazreen has been arranged, her marriage has been arranged to a man.
Yeah.
Much
and
older
Sahar
man.
Sahar is just devastated. It's really a horrible, horrible scene because she came to this party like, oh, I'm going to have a nice time, and I'm going to see my secret girlfriend. And then she's just blindsided by this engagement announcement, so...
And, of course, arranged marriage is that the norm in Iran today still?
Not always. Yeah. I think people have a choice. And if you keep reading the book, you realize that Nazreen kind of had a choice in the matter. So it's not like anyone who comes up, you're like, oh, yes, this is totally a guy for me. But I think it's a traditional kind of, you know, I think people date, but then when you, but you're hush-hush about your dating, kind of, or people know, but you're not so public about it, and then let's say you come to the parents and say, I'd like to marry your daughter, or, you know, it's a pretty traditional custom, but I don't think it's like, as we in the West think, like, oh, you're bound to this person. It's, you have a decision most, I mean, depending on the family, you know, how strict the family is or how traditional, and I think as people continue to read the book, they'll realize that Nazreen kind of has a choice in it, in a way.
But she decides to go along because she looks at the, I guess, the cultural situation, and mm-hmm. that she feels like they'll never be together.
Right. She looks at where they're living. She looks at what her parents' expectations of her are. She does want kids one day. You know, she does like the idea of having her own family. And I think, but the problem with Nastreen is she thinks she can have her cake and eat it too, where she can have the nice life with this nice man. And, you know, but then Sahar will just always be around.
Right.
And so Sahar is like, well, that's adultery and I'm not into that. So again, I don't want to spoil too much of the book before people read it, but it brings up a lot of conflicting emotions and conflicting identities, where I think Nastreen wants, she's always been used to having everything she wants and is pretty spoiled. Mm-hmm. And so she's viewing her relationships as no different than that.
Sahar, though, finds another possible solution.
Mm-hmm.
And this is one of the interesting dichotomies of Iranian law, which is, while same-sex relationships are impermissible and actually illegal, transgender issues are not.
Right.
In fact, it is feeling, I guess, if I can paraphrase, the feeling is that if you are a man trapped in a woman's body or vice versa, this is a mistake of nature and it can be fixed and actually encouraged to be fixed.
Yeah.
Is that...
It's not encouraged to be fixed, but it's illegal. You know, it's a legal thing. And the problem being, too, is that it's not just for transgendered. Let's say you feel like you are in the wrong body, but you don't want to undergo the gender reassignment. They want you to undergo the gender reassignment. So there's no tolerance for, like, ambiguity. It's like you have to do the whole...
And that gets to an issue that's very important, is that if you feel you're a woman trapped in a man's body, that's one thing. But if you're mm-hmm. attracted to a man as a man, that's two completely different issues.
Yeah. So a lot of the characters that Sahar meets when she's exploring this idea, because for her, it's, you know, she's very desperate and naive and wants to stop her girlfriend's wedding. But she meets a bunch of characters. You know, some are very happy with being trans and, you know, actually are. And so the operation has benefited them, and that's not to say it's not a group that doesn't meet discrimination, but that
yes.
it's a legal thing. And based on, and so the characters who are actually trans are very happy and confident, and very, that was a great choice for them to be who they actually are, you know. But then there's some characters who have just kind of undergone it as a last resort or their only option. So it brings up kind of an issue of, like, well, you know, is it just helping, you know, trans citizens, or is it also just a lot of kind of gay people who feel like they want to live in their country, so what do they do? So it brings up a lot of the paradoxes and dichotomy between sexual orientation and gender identity.
Yeah. My guest today is Sarah Farazan. Her first novel is titled If You Could Be Mine. It's published by Algonquin Books, and she's our guest today on Studio Tulsa. Well, having grown up in America, being born and grown up in America, how did you learn about Iranian culture? I know Iranian culture was celebrated in your home. You spoke mm-hmm. Farsi, but still, that's two completely different things from growing up in America with the Iranian identity and actually experiencing Iranian culture.
Oh, definitely. And I worry about that all the time because, you know, it's like, oh, who's this American writing about us? You know, she doesn't live here. But I think a lot of the cultural mores really transcend national boundaries, you know, because I was really filled with a lot of, like, shame and disappointment, and because I didn't want to bother my parents and their community, which is, you know, it's kind of like they brought it over here from there.
Mm-hmm.
But I went back. When I was writing the thesis, about a summer in Iran, just Tehran, and really talked to lots of different people, and not necessarily about, like, what do you think about transsexuals, or, you know, what's your love life like, because that's kind of hard to do with anybody. So it was more what people's day-to-day lives were like, and from all different backgrounds. So you had secular people who, you know, were not very religious, and then religious people and their kind of view on life every day, and everyone was very nice, and I think that's also what I want to do, too, is write these characters who are set in a country that we in the West are like, oh, it's very scary, and they're all weird and have beards, and, you know. But actually, everyone who I encountered was very kind and hospitable. So I'm interested in having characters that are not our perception of, or no, the Western perception of what Iranians may be like. But also, yeah, I worry about that all the time. And I don't think I'll set another book in Iran because it's just too hard. And I perhaps don't think I can go back if they get wind of the book. But I was very, it was important to me because I think these are issues we just don't talk about in Persian society, abroad and otherwise. You know, sometimes we do, but we shy away from it. And I just think, you know, if the book can help a family who's maybe going through a similar situation, who's not living in Iran, but living here or somewhere else, and whose parents are from another country where there's a lot of traditional culture and values, then hopefully it can help someone that way. But I don't know, it's hard because I worry about, you know, how people will take it, and I understand it's not for everyone, and it's not a book that I see has a huge market all the time because there are no elves or wizards or, you know, supernatural creatures. It's Iranian lesbians, and so I'm very passionate about visibility and getting people to talk about issues versus hopefully maybe my third book will be about something supernatural.
No.
And that'll be a big cash cow. And but for the most part, I'm just always been very interested in these issues. And also, you know, in future works, I don't think I will always write LGBT stories, but just mm-hmm. issues that affect teenagers now. Mm-hmm. So, you know, like the economy or getting into school or, you know, bullying or any other kind of issue that I think kids are kind of going through.
If I can take you back to Iran for a second. Now,
yes.
Were you estranged from the country growing up, or was it, I know you have family in Iran still.
Yeah, no.
So you were going
I
back and forth?
I've been there a few times mm-hmm. Over the course of my life. This last time I was there, I hadn't been there in about 9 years or so. Iran's sort of like this, I've said it before, but it's like this older sibling that's away at college, where you have all these fond feelings for them and great pride, and they come up in conversation at the dinner table often. But then sometimes you forget about them or feel like you don't know them as well as you did. So it's always going to be a huge part of my identity, and I don't deny that at all. I never have, especially when it wasn't very popular. I don't know. I think I've had these two identities, actually three, of being American, of being Iranian, and being gay, where I think, like, you know, which one kind of wins out. I don't know that there's a perfect balance in those three identities.
You mentioned when things are bad, and really it all depends on today's headlines, how things are bad between the United States and Iran, because, mm-hmm. you know, even now with Syria, you know, it could go downhill in a day, really.
Yes,
and how people react to people from Iran or with Iranian heritage.
Yeah.
Growing up, that must have been incredibly difficult, being, first of all, feeling in your heart of hearts that you're gay, and mm-hmm. two, being from Iran. I would think you probably had some tough experiences growing up.
I did, but actually, you know, it's very interesting. I think once you take pride in an identity and you don't shy away from it and you kind of present yourself as very proud, I mean, you end up answering a lot of silly questions.
A lot of times?
But, yeah.
Over and over again?
But I think it's also when you take pride in something, people respect that. So I had never had as much trouble with my Iranian-American heritage. I had trouble more with my gay identity because it was something that I was not proud of. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, I mean, there were times when it was tough, but also I think after 9/11, I was a junior in high school, and so everyone was really scared, but, you know, I was scared too about what does this mean for people like me or Middle Eastern Americans, you know,
mm-hmm.
And so I went to this very preppy school, which was predominantly white, really lovely place, but you know, I ended up kind of being, and maybe I brought this upon myself because I made a speech about how we shouldn't get caught up in racial profiling and the people who did this are terrible people and, you know, this does not reflect the 1.6 billion Muslims around the world. And so I kind of became this, like, poster child for, like, every question like other concerned students had.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I am not a political science major. I'm 17 years old, and I don't know, you know, how to explain crazy. Or, like, I don't, you know, and I grew up very secular. So it was just a very strange time where, you know, and then they asked me to write, like, a op-ed piece for the school newspaper, and so I did. But then they called it, the title was, like, Arab American Speaks Out or something like that. And then I had to write a letter to the editor and be like, actually,
I'm
not Arab. we're technically Caucasian. We're Persian. We're a different ethnic group. And we speak Farsi, and, you know, this is like calling a Japanese person Korean because they happen to look alike. And then the next year they made me, like, opinion editor. So it was very funny, like, and strange, but just a very kind of, you know, so I've been used to being asked questions about my cultural background often, mm-hmm. and I don't mind because usually they're not met with malice. You know, people are just curious. Mm-hmm. But it's a new front to be kind of out and also having to explain things to my own culture about gay people. So it's just very strange. Hopefully one day I'll just shut up and no one will care about me, and I just, you know, can not talk about anything, you know, except what TV show I like or just very plain, boring things.
Well, if you will pardon me, I will ask one more
question. No, you're allowed to. You're lovely. I just mean in my day-to-day, you know, when I'm buying a burrito or something.
Well, if you will pardon me for a second, I want you. You've written about coming out to your parents, and of course, this is for gay people. This is one of the most traumatic experiences. How mm-hmm. your parents are going to react?
Yeah.
And coming from a conservative culture, mm-hmm. the fears are, whether it's an American conservative culture or Iranian or Russian yeah. or wherever, it's the fears have to be magnified. Can you talk about that decision and how that went for you? Because it went
in high school, I mean, I knew from as early, like even elementary school age, that something was different, and I just didn't voice it. But I felt like it was a phase or I would grow out of it, and I just didn't talk about any of that. And I think it really occurred to me by age 16, 17 that this was not going away. Even though I didn't have a girlfriend, I wasn't dating anyone, but it just was not going away. And by 18, you know, I finally couldn't take it anymore because I was living this very dual personality. Of outside, I was very, you know, bubbly and social and talking to people, and I was, like, voted school president, and I was, like, saying, oh, go to the pep rally this weekend, it's going to be awesome. You know, and then have to have a front to my parents that everything was fine. So the only time I had to myself was, like, my drive from school to home, mm-hmm. and where I would just, like, cry in my car and really release. Because inside I was just angry and sad and felt very lonely that I couldn't really talk to anyone. And not just, I mean, I knew of, like, a gay teacher or two, or I had a friend who was, but given the cultural context, I felt like I couldn't talk to anyone because they didn't fully understand, like, what that meant. Mm-hmm. So finally at 18, I my mom just kind of asked me because she noticed that I was just really down in the dumps a lot of the time, you know, when I was at home. And, you know, I just sobbed in a towel, and she was not crazy about it, but she's never treated me any differently, and she's just been lovely. And I actually dedicate this first book to my parents, and it says to my mom and dad for loving me as I am. Because I think it's so important for, you know, in this country alone, there's so many LGBT homeless youth, and there's so many kids who are not getting the support that they need. And I know it's hard for parents because you think of this, you know, you have your future planned out for your kid, and you don't want them to kind of be marginalized or have a harder life. But at the same time, were it not for the support of my parents, I am very terrified to think about how I could have ended up, or, you know, what would become of me. Certainly I wouldn't be speaking to a lovely guy like you for radio. I don't know what would happen to me. So I think family is so important for teenagers of any background, but especially who are grappling with, you know, their identity.
Well, it sounds like your parents were really great in that regard.
Oh, yeah, I got very lucky. I won the lottery there.
The name of the book is If You Could Be Mine, which tells a lot of these same stories set in contemporary Iran. Two young characters who love each other, but are dealing with these issues of same-sex relationship in a country that doesn't allow it, and the issues of how you approach your sexual identity. I mean, that's the universal part of this story. I mean,
yeah, it's a really universal love story about what happens when the person you love is someone you can't be with. You know, very Romeo and Juliet. It just happens to be Juliet and Juliet in Tehran with not as tragic an ending. We won't give it away, but it's still pretty sad. So yeah. I hope people can take away, even if it's not really a story that they can fully relate to, I think there are themes that are universal and that can kind of change people's hearts and minds a little bit.
One last question. You mentioned earlier, you said, I might not be able to go back to Iran. Is that a fear in the back of your mind that the if this book becomes known that you'll never go back?
Yeah, I don't say anything in the book that's anti-government, I mean, it's just the rules are what they are, mm-hmm. And there's no character that's really like, oh my God, I hate living here. It's they love their country, their families are there, their work is there. But I do worry because I don't want to cause any problems for my family or if I'm not allowed to go back, that's okay. I think there are other places to see and I don't want to go somewhere where I'm not welcome. But, it's a concern just because I'm not very confrontational, which I don't think comes across from the books I've written. But, the books are coming from a place of compassion and help and not hurt. And hopefully people get that no matter where they're living. I don't know, it'll be very interesting to see. I'm just taking it one day at a time and waiting for NBA basketball to start so I can watch the Thunder. And is Russell Westbrook back or not?
I have not heard yet.
Oh, my goodness.
You're a Thunder fan?
Well, I'm primarily a Celtics fan. But
well, of course. I would
Kevin
say they
Durant.
Would kick you out of Massachusetts if that was...
I love... my goodness. I was so sad when James Harden left.
Yes.
But I'm glad that he's a star in Houston and doing that. But, just such a great team.
Well, thank you. Well, I'm...
Oh, you're welcome.
I'm glad to hear that.
Thank you. It's been... NBA basketball is like my anxiety reduction because I don't think about anything but like who's scoring and who's... It's really nice.
Well, we wish you great success with the book, which has been getting incredible reviews. I mean, that's got to be...
Oh, good. I haven't read any of them because I don't want to... I get nervous. So I just kind of don't Google myself or don't want to know.
Well, for a first novel, it sounds like you're off to an auspicious start.
Oh, I hope so. And I hope I can keep telling stories and that leads the way for other diverse storytellers and diverse stories.
Well, we wish you great success.
Sarah, thank you so much.
Thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you.
Sarah Farazan's first novel is titled If You Could Be Mine. It's published by Algonquin Books, and she's our guest today on Studio Tulsa. Well, that's Studio Tulsa for today. Our program is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. The views of our guests and commentators are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of KWGS or its licensee, the University of Tulsa. If you missed one of our previous programs, they're available online anytime at publicradiotulsa.org. Just find Studio Tulsa. You can search through our archives for past programs. I'm Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening.